If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at wintrust.com/cubs. I'm Tony Andracki here with Scott Chagnon, Jeff Nelson, and Patrick Mooney is also joining us from St. Louis. Three different perspectives here from these three guys on the Cubs clinching. Pat was obviously there and in the clubhouse. Nelly, you were on the field in St. Louis, and you drove back at 3:30 a.m. Thursday morning from St. Louis to Chicago.
What day is it?
It's Thursday.
Okay. Yeah, that was today. Yeah. That was today.
And Scotty, you were doing what you do, hang out in Wrigleyville at bars.
Being in a bar is my natural habitat. Why not?
I got the short. Yeah, you got the good one.
Pat, let's start with you. You know, I know you've obviously you were there for the World Series. You were there for the clinch parties in the last 3 years. What were some of your main takeaways between everything? You know, was it Lester's swearing on live CSN Chicago broadcast about John Lackey? Was it, you know, Ben Zobrist talking about how he didn't mean to call the Cardinals out or give them bulletin board materials? Or what was your take?
Well, I guess it would be just that moment, you know, at the final out, and we all experienced, you know, covering – last year's game seven, and you know that was kind of the last clinch scenario that as a news organization we're kind of running through with the Cubs, and just this kind of muted celebration. And I was talking about that with Steve Greenberg with the Sun-Times, and he noticed this moment where kind of like Rizzo and Bryant looked at each other and they were kind of going for the hug, and then they weren't sure if they were supposed to do it. Like, it wasn't this kind of complete unbelievable release, and that it wasn't total mayhem in the clubhouse. I'm sure it probably looked that way on TV when they're dropping F-bombs and things like that, but it wasn't you know, last year when everywhere you turned in that clubhouse it was like, oh hey, there's Kerry Wood and there's Bill Murray and there's so-and-so's agent and there's, you know, players family and friends just kind of spilling in every direction. It was a pretty tighter, smaller party, but I do think the takeaway walking out of that room, besides how, you know, bad we all smelled, was how confident this Cubs team is and how much they believe they can do it again.
Yeah, from being there, I was on the field for a while, and then I ended up going into the clubhouse for a while. It seemed like more of a phew than a, yeah, we did it. It was kind of preordained since spring training that this was going to happen. I've come to the realization, I think the St. Louis press box is cursed, because I was down there for games Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday, I stayed in the press box for the first seven innings. They were down five. I went out to sit in the stands, and all of a sudden they start scoring. Wednesday, I was in the press box for the first six innings when it was 1-0. Wow. I went downstairs, and all of a sudden they started scoring again. So I had to sort of, that was kind of weird. I ended up going down to the field level to into the camera well to for the last couple of innings of the clincher, which is a very weird experience to get to, because to get to from anywhere you're working on into the camera well, you have to literally walk onto the field behind home plate, then walk over to the Cubs dugout and walk right past Joe Maddon, who's standing on the steps going up there in between innings and that, and wait for guys to come out to the batting, to the on-deck circle, and then go into the camera well to do it. So you're just kind of, you feel awkward, like you're invading somebody's space, it's an unbelievable vantage point.
So you think then the players saw you walk by and they're like, hey, we got to get this going.
the producer's here to do something for the post. We got to get going. But no, it was more of a release, and it was more, I mean, everybody, they went out and they did a quick little thing on the field. I think they just want to be respectful of the Cardinals thing and don't tear up everything on the field. We thought maybe that they would come out afterwards, because there's still a few thousand Cub fans. Anybody who was left was a Cub fan, was sitting outside of the Cubs dugout cheering, and they were there for a good 15 or 20 minutes before security shooed them away, and when it was obvious that they weren't coming back out. But going in, it's a unique experience to be in a locker room like that. I can imagine these guys have become professionals with doing this too. And just think of how spoiled guys like Chris Bryant and Addison Russell, and to a lesser extent Kyle Schwarber, are.
Yeah,
in their major league career, they know nothing other than there's a champagne celebration at the end of
the season. They think this is how all seasons are supposed to end, is clinch parties and spraying champagne and pouring a handle of Fireball into John Leckie's mouth or whatever that was. Scotty, take us inside your experience. So you were at
Cubs pregame live was at Sluggers in Wrigleyville on Clark Street. Cap and DeJesus were there, and then they left, and I showed up around the second inning with my camera. I also had all my my iPhone ready for any kind of social media stuff. And you know, I looked down and I looked up, and it was already the seventh inning.
Yeah, that one went fast.
It was a quick game. That was the end, everybody's looking around, and to be honest,
did it go fast because you were drinking so much?
Yeah,
I'll play the fifth.
I took six shots, and the next thing
are you pleading the fifth?
I was like, what's going on here?
Pleading the fifth or taking the fifth?
Oh, taking the fifth. Okay. Sorry. Good point. But no, I mean, the bar, to be honest, like, it was just like a normal Wednesday night crowd. It wasn't anything overcrowded for a Wednesday, you know. So that was kind of taken back by that a little bit. You know, I think a lot of fans, especially that live around the area, have kind of like, okay, they won the World Series, we can kind of relax and just watch from home now. We don't have to be in the mix that much. But, you know, obviously towards the end of the game, once I think fans that lived in the area saw that, you know, the Cubs had this in hand, they started to come in. I got set up by the two projector screens there. I had a Periscope Live going in the corner that just showed live reaction of everybody's faces watching the screens, which is a pretty cool vantage point. It was about 12, 13 minutes live of that. And then I had my high-definition camera on my shoulder ready for the final out, too. Final out happened, did a lap around the bar, singing Go Cubs Go. People were happy, obviously, and then made my way down to the marquee. I would say maybe about 100 people out there taking pictures. It wasn't anything. Nobody's blocking the streets or anything. There's a few dozen cops making sure everything was okay. But
it wasn't like the Battle of the Bastards thing that I know people described last year outside the marquee.
Barely surviving. I'm not there with my camera trying to breathe for air. But, you know, it was cool because, I mean, it's still relatively early in the evening. So you had parents with their, like, you know, 3-4-year-old kids with Cubs sweatshirts on, happy, and getting to experience it. So it's kind of cool to see that aspect of it, where it's not total mayhem party mode right outside. I only saw one guy with a bottle of champagne going crazy for a little bit, and that was about it.
It's weird that they're kind of becoming jaded to these things, because if you think of it, this is the, under the Theo regime, this is the eighth champagne celebration they've had between clinching a playoff spot and clinching a playoff series. So it's kind of become old hat, which is, I mean, 4 years ago, did you ever think, oh, the Cubs clinched a playoff, and 100 people will show up? That's just, I guess that's the price of success, is you kind of lose that sense of wonderment and all that.
And since I recently moved to Wrigleyville, I walked two blocks and started editing on my editing laptop and put together about a two-minute mashup of the final out and the celebration. And then we had a handful of interviews. We got me and Danny Wysocki were able to get some good stuff, and a lot of positive fans out there. Obviously, they're all going to be happy, but let's take a listen to two guys that we interviewed last night that I thought were two of the best sound bites I got.
Cubs have only ever, in the history of the Cubs, they've only ever won World Series in pairs. 1907, 1908, 2016, 2017, I think so. So this is the first step. Let's go.
Man, like, it feels so good after so many years of the Cardinals clinching here. Tables are finally turned. We are the hammer in that rivalry now. You're the nail. You're the nail, St. Louis. You're the nail. Woo! Let's go, Cubs! Let's go, Cubs!
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC.
All right, welcome back into the Cubs Talk podcast. Again, I'm Tony Andracki here with Scott Chagnon. Jeff Nelson and Patrick Mooney is joining us on the phone from St. Louis. Pat, I know you wrote in your story yesterday about the difference between, you know, 2011 when Mike Quadi was just trying to, like, he was kind of like the substitute teacher, you called him. And, you know, to now, they, like Nelly was just saying before, you know, we went to break, it is different. I mean, these young guys, they only know the world of celebrating. And the the fans now, you know, there are so many, maybe bandwagon fans, but that not necessarily negative connotation, fans who may not have been following the Cubs as closely until the last few years. They don't really know the Cardinals as these big, bad, you know, this big brother, because the Cubs really have changed that around. I mean, Pat, in your perspective, like how important do you think that was, changing the perception of the Cardinals to getting the Cubs to building their own empire?
No doubt. It was huge. And I mean, Tony, you know how it is on when you're sitting in front of your laptop, in the ninth inning, and you know the havoc a Carlos Marmol could wreak.
Oh my God! Stop!
And just like
fingernails on a chalkboard.
It was just like this sense you would feel, you know, showing up for a day game, you know, or getaway day at Busch Stadium, and it's like the Cubs, you know, kind of take a lead, and you could just feel as soon as you know one thing happened, whether it was like a walk or an error or some weird umpire review, that
a cubby occurrence.
It would totally shift in the Cardinals' favor, and you'd be furiously, you know, deleting and rewriting and copying and pasting. And the one moment that really crystallized it for me was late in the 2011 season, as I wrote, almost exactly, you know, whatever it is, 6 years to the day that they clinched. Is just this scene of a one-run loss. I think Kwadi pitched to Pujols like 2 days in a row, and the Cubs were heading out for their rookie hazing thing. And, you know, one player had to put on this Chinese takeout food box, and, you know, another player cracked like, racist and funny, and just kind of started laughing. And the coach walks out of the coach's room and just looked absolutely just furious and could not believe how quickly they just didn't seem to care. It's like, oh, well, they lost. Let's dress up the rookies, take photos, and, you know, fly out to San Diego. And it also showed me a lot about the Cardinals and how, you know, it wasn't just that game where if you give them an inch, they kind of take everything. It was, they kind of ducked into the playoffs the last day of the regular season. I think they needed like the Braves to lose or something like that to get in. And then, you know, of course they get hot and win their 11th World Series title. And it's just amazing how much happened in that month's time between it. When you get, you know, Ricketts landing Theo, and then the Cardinals win their World Series that October. And it certainly took several years before it happened, but I think Theo put it best, saying that 2015 playoff series, we were all there for that. It's one that's kind of overlooked and not talked about that much, but it totally changed the dynamic, where the Cubs were no longer going to be kind of intimidated or unsure or uncertain when they came into Busch Stadium or when the Cardinals came to Wrigley. They knew they could beat them. And the Cardinals really haven't been the same ever since.
Yeah, I think even before that NLDS, you go back a couple weeks prior to that with the weekend series at Wrigley Field with the beanballs,
yeah,
and Joe calling out, asking if Tony Soprano's in the Cardinal dugout ordering a hit. I think that kind of, that's where Joe really stepped up and said, hey, that's it. I'm new here. This is my first year in this rivalry, but I'm not going to take it anymore. We're not going to be the patsies to the Cardinals anymore. We are our own team, and hashtag we are good.
Yep.
So,
yeah, and you know, definitely that is kind of funny. I mean, I think it was just last week or 2 weeks ago that it was the 2 year anniversary of that moment. And I mean, we almost had a little bit of that this week.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Pham thinking he got hit on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Rizzo suspiciously gets hit in the first inning of that game. But obviously, you know, that didn't even end up playing out to be anything of note. But you know, it is kind of funny to see the way things have shaken out. And just for, you know, from fans' perspective or just covering the team too, like from, you know, journalists' perspective, the Cubs have not made three straight playoffs since 1906, 1907, and 1908. I mean, as mind-boggling as like the 1908, you know, World Series thing. Like, this is just as much of a stretch that, oh, you know, yeah, it's been, you know, over 100 years since that. And it's just, it's crazy to think about that and wrap your head around that. And I think it is kind of easy for Cubs fans to almost be a little spoiled right now, but not in a bad way. I mean, because they have expectations to want to do it again for the fourth straight year next year. So it is kind of funny to see now the Cubs are the big brother in the NL Central and the Brewers are kind of the little brother. And the Cardinals, are, in a lot of ways, I feel like they're kind of stuck in limbo there.
Yeah, this is kind of, I guess this is a sliver of what Yankees fans maybe felt like for so long, just maybe being the utterly dominant and
90s Braves.
90s Braves would be a good thing, just so good that you really have to stop and just enjoy it, because this is rare. I mean, it's obviously in 100 years, but even rare in baseball for a team to be this dominant over a period of more than 1 or 2 years is pretty rare.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears a bit and move on to the future while looking at the recent past. John Lackey was pretty good on Wednesday night. He obviously helped the Cubs clinch with six strong innings. He's had a really good stretch. He has a 2.51 ERA in almost 30 innings in September, so he's really peaking at the right time. That being said, there's no way he's in the playoff rotation, right? Pat, let's start with you. Your thoughts on John Lackey. You know, he obviously didn't come here for a haircut, but did he come here to start a division or possibly even an LCS game in 2017?
I mean, my early read on this is that you kind of have to get through this weekend and see how Lester and Arrieta do, mostly from a kind of health perspective. And I think it's hard to keep Lackey off the roster. I mean, you know, what if Arrieta does throw a pitch and all of a sudden starts hopping around on the mound in the second inning at Nationals Park or whatever? I mean, you kind of need that emergency, that in case of emergency option, you know, from my perspective. I think it's impossible to think that, like, John Lackey is going to be, you know, getting hot and coming in, you know, in the seventh inning with, like, two runners on. I mean, I think he's just not really built for that anymore. It'll be fascinating to see how the Cubs break the news to him.
yes, Madden, it will.
Yeah. Madden does not relish that. I'm sure he'll just have Boz do it. that seems to be the strategy here, but
will security be present?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be. Yeah. Sure. A nice way for him to go out last night. But I think if you know, Madden kind of foretold this a little yesterday, just in terms of that good outing, that, you know, the Cardinals were a good matchup for him. He likes pitching in Busch Stadium, and he can still kind of get up for the occasional big boy game. Whereas, you know, the Brewers, if you saw last week, were clearly, you know, not a good matchup. And we've just seen too much with Lackey, the hard contact, and, you know, it takes him a couple innings to kind of get rolling. You know, I just don't think he's among your top four choices for the rotation. I mean, how could he be?
Yeah, and it's just, he's a guy who's so stuck in his way, so you just can't see him coming out of the bullpen. Obviously, it would have to be a clean inning that he'd come in on, but it's just his whole makeup and demeanor is he's geared towards throwing the first pitch, his first pitch at a certain time of day,
yeah,
and it kind of works backwards from that. But that said, I mean, if you want an option to leave somebody off the roster, the Cubs are, Joe has the option that guys are so versatile and play in different positions that you, do you leave yourself one short just to leave a guy like on Lackey just in, like Patrick said, in case of emergency, in case Jake's hamstring is not, yeah, coming all the way back the way, I mean, obviously he said he's not 100%, and if it's goes the other way in the over his last start against the Reds, maybe you have another option, but at least you have a week to make that decision.
Some time to see what happens in the next week or so.
Yeah, and the important thing to note with Lackey is he has not pitched out of the bullpen since 2004. To put that in perspective, that was the year I got my license. So the entire time I've been driving in my life, John Lackey has been a starting pitcher. But, yeah, I mean, he said before there's no way that's going to happen. And I know when people asked him, it was, you know, because of how well Mike Montgomery was pitching. It was when Quintana came over. Lackey was not pitching, excuse me, as well at that time. And he was all regular season talk. things might have changed for him a bit. I would be surprised if they did. But, I mean, Pat, I know you and I have talked about it as well. Joe Maddon has also essentially said, like, there's no way they're not, you know, they're not talking about putting him in the bullpen, at least for, like, the regular season. So it would be really stunning to see him come out in the seventh inning or anything like that after not – he wasn't used to it. You know, John Lester wasn't used to it in Game 7 of the World Series last year. That being said, he still was – his most recent bullpen appearance was, what, 2008? So 2008 to 2016 is a much bigger difference than 2004 to 2017. Yeah. I don't really see it happening. But at the same time, right now, based on the projections that, you know, we were talking about with the roster, and, Pat, again, this is something you and I discussed, I mean, Justin Grimm and Justin Wilson are the 24th and 25th guys, in my opinion, that would be on the roster. I could see Lackey replacing either one of those guys to be that emergency pitcher where, you know, all right, so if Maddon matches up and uses Dunsing for one hitter against a lefty and C.J. Edwards for one hitter against a righty, and then they end up going into extra innings, then, yeah, Lackey's out there and he's stretched out, and he could give you maybe four or five innings. I as of right now, though, Grimm and Wilson, if they made it, I don't know how they would even come close to being in Madden's circle of trust.
Yeah, I think, to me, Lackey is going to be on that roster. I think it's just a matter of when he pitches or if he even does pitch. And I think, Tony, you're kind of hitting on it that, you know, not to be a buzzkill here, but the Cubs bullpen doesn't look very good, does it, right now?
No, it doesn't.
Wade Davis has been awesome, except when he finally blows a save and then says, yeah, my arm was dragging a little bit, but I am 100% and I feel good. And, you know, we all know, you know, CJ has had a up and down season, but certainly is a young guy who's had a, you know, great start to his career so far. And, you know, Mike Montgomery has been super valuable, and the Cubs have kind of talked in circles with that of, you know, well, we need to put him in the bullpen to help out there. And then Jen Hosang bombs in his debut, and then all of a sudden they put Montgomery in and he takes a no-hitter in the sixth inning. So, I mean, they're going to lean on Montgomery a lot. And I think because of that, you know, you might want to have Lackey in reserve, although, you know, he showed up at spring training this year and started, you know, passive-aggressively blaming Maddon for having him warm up in the bullpen last year in those extra inning games, and basically blamed that, you know, for his whatever shoulder injury he had. So, I mean, I think we're not talking just emotionally, mentally, Lackey being Lackey. I think physically to kind of do that and handle that bullpen load would be really hard for him. But at the same time, you know, the Justins aren't really –
the Justins.
kind of pounding the table saying we need to be on this roster right now.
And just for all the jumping on Lackey that we do, because it's fun and it's easy to do, just talking with Kelly Krull down there in St. Louis, she's talked to a bunch of players in the locker room who have nothing but the greatest things to say about him and his clubhouse demeanor. And not just young guys, guys like Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward have played on multiple teams, have said he is one of the best teammates. He doesn't talk a lot, but when he says it, he may say something like, I didn't come here for a haircut, in kind of a joking way, but there's a message that he's delivering to everybody behind it that comes through loud and clear that he's all business and he came there for the jewelry.
You can even tell in that toast they gave to him, too. Everybody was on board with that, too.
Oh, yeah, the whole... Yeah.
Where were you at for that?
I had just walked in the locker room when that happened. I literally just walked in when Lester started toasting.
That's amazing.
So it took me a couple seconds to catch up what was going on. Because I heard the last regular season started, and I'm like, oh, whoa, really?
Oh,
really?
Interesting.
Interesting.
That's an interesting segue, too, because, you know, Lackey had been saying, and Cubs around him have been saying, if he retires, he'd just ride off into the sunset and nobody would talk about
it. And then join Dancing with the Stars.
Right? Yeah, of course. Yeah, Lackey, I could totally see him in his cowboy boots on Dancing with the Stars.
Swing dancing out there.
But I thought that was interesting that Lester's closest friend on the team was talking about it's possibly, you know, I mean, Lester doesn't make that speech, obviously, unless he's talked closely with his buddy.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. But I like how he did specify regular season start. So he did leave the – Lester was – I mean, that was really smart by him because he not only made sure that Lackey didn't ride off into the sunset without saying a word, like Lackey and Maddon have joked would be how the veteran would retire, But Lester also set the table for the possibility of Lackey pitching in the postseason, which, I mean, again, in August, I don't think Cubs fans, you know, Cubs fans are probably more okay with Justin Wilson than John Lackey at that point, which was crazy at the time. But, Pat, you know, talking about, we were talking about the Justins, but really Wilson, I know you guys have gotten an opportunity to talk to Justin Wilson this week, but what's the status there? He had a dominant outing against the Brewers over the weekend, struck out three of the four hitters he faced, retired all four guys. Then he comes out, walks two guys, and it gets pulled in the middle of an at-bat. Like, what's with the up and down right now? I know Cubs are searching for answers, but what's going on there?
Yeah, it's funny, Tony. A scout tracking the Cubs for playoff coverage kind of asked me the same thing the other day. That was like kind of a first thought on his mind, and he was really stunned because, I mean, this guy had just a great season with the Yankees in 2015, doing it in the American League East. You see his velocity readings. I think it was something like 17 fastballs between 95 and 97 against the Brewers the other day. But at this point, he just has no idea where it's going. And, you know, Bosio goes on the score yesterday and says, oh, yeah, he has a stiff neck. And Wilson says, yeah, I slept wrong. It's annoying, but I can deal with it. You know, no excuses. And it really is kind of mystifying because, you know, the move made total sense. You know, the Cubs had targeted this guy. They talked to the Tigers for weeks. He's done it in the ninth inning before. And I think someone like him clearly doesn't have a lot of capital built up with Joe Maddon the way that, you know, a Lester or a Lackey obviously would. We know Joe has a quick hook with certain bullpen guys, and whether Maddon admits it or not, his bullpen management will be completely under the microscope after what happened with Aroldis Chapman last year. So Justin Wilson, a guy who came in, we all thought saying, hey, maybe this is next year's closer, is, you know, almost kind of off the radar here, and I think it underscores how great, you know, Wade Davis has been and what a, you know, difference maker he could be this October.
All right, we're going to take another quick break here on the Cubs Talk podcast, and when we come back, you know, if we're all kind of in agreement that Lackey's not in the rotation, assuming health, let's talk about how the Cubs might line up their rotation against the Nationals.
After every Cubs game, stay tuned for Cubs Post Game Live, sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, with David Kaplan and David DeJesus. Hear from Cubs players inside the locker room. Get a live look inside Joe Maddon's post game press conferences and more.
All right, welcome back in the last segment of the Cubs Talk podcast. So if Lackey's out of the rotation, again, this is all assuming health of Lester with his shoulder issue, Arrieta with his hamstring, and that Kyle Hendricks and Jose Quintana don't get hurt over the next couple of days of the season. But if Lackey's out, then you have those other four in. How do they slot up? We know that the Cubs are facing the Nationals as guaranteed. So they have Friday the 6th, Saturday the 7th in Washington, an off day Sunday, and then Monday is game 3 back at Wrigley, Monday the 9th, I think it is, and then Tuesday the 10th is game 4 if necessary. Who goes what? Scotty, let's start. Where do you think the best scenario would be?
I mean, right now, I mean, obviously we'd see what happens the rest of the regular season, but I would go Lester, Arrieta, Hendricks, Quintana. It's mine.
Very similar to last year then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking Hendricks for that first game at home, especially if we're in a tough situation where we have a must-win game. I'd rather have Hendricks than Quintana just with his, you know, his what he did last year.
Yeah, and Hendricks is a little bit of a different pitcher, even still at home at Wrigley.
Exactly.
Than he was on the road. We saw a huge discrepancy last year. This year, they're a little bit more in line, but yeah. Either way, he is still a better pitcher at home. Nelly, what do you think?
I mean, it's so easy to go with that, and that's such a good, obvious choice, but Jose Quintana has been so good over the
that's true
thing. I just as a Cub fan, I flash back to Lou Piniella taking Zambrano out early because he wants to save him for game four, but there never was one.
Yeah.
So if you go Lester Arrieta, Hendricks, 1-2-3.
Get a baseball hat, put the names in the hat, and shake it up and pick it up that way.
Obviously, it's just going to come down to how is John feeling. Does John become the John of the first half rather than post after his the DL stint? Same with Jake Arrieta. He's looked okay in the first one. The second one, he just couldn't. He admitted he's feeling it and it's making adjustments that aren't working yet. Maybe you just I have really no good answer, but I would want to see Carlos or Jose Quintana pitch before a game four. I'd love to see him win in one of the first three games.
Pat, what do you think? And I know when Arrieta first was coming back, you wrote the story about how the Cubs might be lining him up perfectly to be on the exact rest, the 5-day rest in between to start game one. He is starting the last game of the season Sunday against the Reds at Wrigley. Then would have 4 days off, be on perfect rest for game one. Do you still see that playing out? Or, is it possible that the Cubs go with like a Hendricks Quintana in the first two games and roll the dice with Arrieta and Lester after?
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind is that pitching coach Chris Bosio operates. That, I can't get the exact timeline down, but he's the type of guy when – these pitchers show up in Arizona, like their entire spring is scripted out. Wade Davis is going to throw, seven appearances, one inning each. It's so meticulously mapped out. And I do think as the Cubs got deeper into the season and could see where this was heading, I do think they had purposely lined up Arrieta and Lester for those first two games in Washington. I think at this point now, it's very much up in the air. And I asked Jake last night, you want the ball game one? He said, of course, everybody does. I'm going to use these next few days and get as close to 100% as I can. But the way Madden was talking yesterday, he really didn't exactly downplay what Jake is going through, just saying how this is something that's going to be in the back of Jake Arrieta's mind every single time he goes into that windup and wondering if it's going to happen again. And you wonder if he's just off, going to be off a degree or two in what's a very complicated, unique delivery as it is. So as I listen to Madden and some of the hints he's dropped when he says that Kyle Hendricks is pitching as well as I've ever seen him pitch, and knowing that he's the guy who beat Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers to, win this franchise's first pennant in, I think, 71 years, and someone who started a World Series Game 7 already. I mean, to me, and I think that's going to be kind of the Thursday's pregame angle during Madden session is, how much is Kyle in play? And I think, from this vantage point, very much so. And as much as the Cubs love John Lester, and as much as he's completely changed franchise history, I think he's closer to a Game 4 starter than a Game 1 starter. So to me, and we don't know all of the geek department printouts that they have, and there are certain things that they're weighing that we can't even realize. But to me, a Hendricks, Arrieta, Quintana, Lester, or if you put Quintana in game two, that does make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. While Lester and Arrieta have been building health, on the other hand, Hendricks and Quintana have been building stamina.
Resume, yeah.
Yeah, they, both of these guys, their last few times out, they're well over 100 plus pitches. Quintana was, I think, 116 or 117.
Yeah, yeah.
Complete game shutout on Sunday against the Brewers. Hendricks, got into over, I think it was around 115.
And wanted to go more.
Right, yeah. And he was saying, I think it was against the Cardinals was what it was. He threw his 115th pitch was 89 miles an hour. It was one of the fastest, if not the fastest pitch he threw all year. He admitted he missed location on it. But either way, he was even a little surprised with how good he felt with that. And so the Cubs, like you talked about Pat Bazio and Joe Maddon, they built these guys up, so they know that if that's the case, if it takes them even 115 pitches to get through six innings in a playoff series, they know that they can do that if that's the case.
And they built them up, and they also kind of pulled in the reins a little bit throughout the first few months of the season, knowing that the team was good enough to win the NL Central, albeit a lot closer to the end of the season than everybody had hoped.
Yeah.
But knowing that they get there, that this is going to be when we need you at your apex.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, too, is, you know, Hendricks is at his apex right now, and Lester and Arrieta are not, but they did save a bunch of bullets. I mean, neither of those guys are close to approaching the 200-inning threshold that they both like. Hendricks, obviously, I mean, he had almost two full months off. But, yeah, you know, it would be interesting. And I know somebody was just mentioning earlier to me that the Nationals might be more – that might be a better matchup for a lefty like Quintana or Lester. You might want to get those two in because of Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy. But the thing is, both of those guys are such great hitters. It doesn't matter if it's lefty or righty against them. And the Nationals actually are a really good team against left-handed pitching because Jason Wirth hammers southpaws, and then they have the Anthony Rendon's, the Trey Turner. And the Turner effect is interesting with Lester, where I'm with you, actually, Pat. I think Lester might be a game four guy because if you get Trey Turner, we've already seen this year how the Nationals run on the Cubs. And that was with Montero and not Wilson behind the plate.
Sure.
So I know that is different. But if Lester's out there and doesn't throw over, if Turner gets on at all, I mean, Turner's been more aggressive than Billy Hamilton or pretty much anybody except for maybe the Brewers against Lester. So that changes the dynamic there, too. And I just don't think that either way, healthy or not, I don't think the Nationals are a great matchup for Lester this October.
And there's Daniel freaking Murphy again.
Oh, no.
Flashback to 2015.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be definitely interesting to see how that plays out. We will have plenty more Cubs Nationals preview coverage. We'll have a podcast right before the NLDS starts next week. They'll do it for our Cubs Talk podcast this week, however, brought to you again by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at wintrust.com/Cubs. Be sure to subscribe to all of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or check it out at csmchicago.com/podcasts. See you next week.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.